This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at cvilletomorrow.org. On November 8, 2005, Albemarle County voters in three magisterial districts will be electing members to four-year terms on the Board of Supervisors. This recording is Brian Wheeler's interview of Christian Schoenwald, candidate for the Jack Jewett seat on the Board of Supervisors. Mr. Schoenwald is running as a Republican. His opponent for this seat is Dennis Rooker. Christian, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow. The complete audio and written transcript for this interview will be available on the Internet. Information from this interview, from some of the candidate forums, and from your campaign materials will be used in the compilation of Charlottesville Tomorrow's Nonpartisan Voter Guide. As you know, Charlottesville Tomorrow does not endorse any candidates, and our goal is to provide information to the public so they can make an informed vote on issues related to land use, transportation, and community design. Also, as you are aware, some of the questions you will be asked have been provided in advance, and others have not. All the candidates will be asked the same questions. Are you ready to start?
Yes.
Question number one. Please describe your past political experience.
This is my first actual political race. Prior to this, I have governmental experience. I've worked at the White House. I was also a graduate of the School of Public Affairs at American University. So there's, coming from that background, there's a fair amount of governmental experience working with various levels, various types of officials. But on the purely political side of it, this is my first campaign. And so far, it's been worthwhile and interesting and exciting. And it's a lot better than being a candidate. Being a politician is a lot better than being a bureaucrat. It's a lot more fulfilling.
Question number two. What makes you better qualified than your opponent?
The thing that I think makes me the most qualified at this point is my willingness to cooperate and seek out the involvement with the other organizations in the region as it relates to how Albemarle County is going to develop and go into the future. My opponent seems to have a lack of cooperation with various neighbors and internal organizations and such. And I think as this becomes a larger regional economy, and as more and more people are driving in from other counties to work in Albemarle County, or the opposite, living in Albemarle County and driving to other places to work, we have to start thinking on a more regional level, and I believe that my background with being able to get groups to cooperate and my personal willingness to cooperate makes me a far more qualified candidate.
Question number three. What do you think is the best water supply source to meet our community's needs for growth and for drought? And a follow-up, would you support a pipeline to the James River to address our water supply needs? Please explain why or why not.
Now, before I say anything, let me qualify my answer saying I'm not a civil engineer, so I don't have the full expertise that someone of that nature would. The best supervisor level person to ask this question is actually David Wyant, because he can tell you all the ins and outs of it. But from my personal perspective, I support the work that the Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority is doing in concert with the Nature Conservancy. I think that organization is the most qualified to say which solution is the best. And as far as I can tell, they're tending away from the pipeline option and towards the other the Ravenna Reservoir linked up with the I forget the name now, the reservoir that's out by Crozet. Is it Ragged Mountain? Well, anyway, the solution that does not involve the James River that the RWSA is actually supporting now, to me, seems to make the most sense. Pipeline works in some places. It worked for Fairfax County, but I don't think, given the nature of the James River and given the distance involved and the complications with what sort of water quality may be coming our way down the James River, I don't think that the pipeline makes the most economic sense or the most practical sense. So I fully support the RWSA and their efforts.
Question number four. The Board of Supervisors will approve ordinances to support recently adopted changes to the rural areas portion of the comprehensive plan. Do you support the rural areas portion of the comprehensive plan, and what new zoning ordinance strategies do you think stand the best chance to protect the rural areas for future generations?
I believe that protection of the rural areas in Albemarle County is vitally important to preserve the character and nature of Albemarle County as it's been and as it can be in the future. The rural section of the comprehensive plan has some good points to it, and it also has some bad points, and I think that you do need to have rural planning involved in an overall planning process. Things that I do not like, I don't like the idea of phasing. Phasing infringes on people's property rights, and it's not actually a spectacular solution to the problem of limiting growth in the rural areas. The idea is that if we limit the amount of property that a person can sell off at any given time, that's going to limit growth. But really, all a smart developer has to do is approach a group of landowners that have property and that share a common border, get them all to sell the amount that would be allowed within that phasing in sort of the center of where all their properties match up, and the developer then gets a big tract of land without having to come up against the phasing restrictions. Unless, of course, they adopt additional ordinances that say that only one landowner can sell off a certain chunk at any given time, and they have to do it in concert with the other landowners, and that would just be a further violation of property rights. So phasing is not good on those two levels. It violates property rights, and it's too easy to get around the intent of that particular ordinance. Clustering in and of itself is not necessarily a bad idea. It allows reasonable development whilst preserving agriculturally useful tracts of land. As it currently stands now, when you segregate out 21-acre plots and put a McMansion on it, you've just destroyed the agriculturally useful sections of an area of land. So clustering in and of itself is not a problem. I really don't like it when it's linked with phasing. As far as other ordinances, I think that we do ourselves a disservice when we look at creating more legislation to solve a problem rather than looking at how we can remove legislation to actually make the government work more smoothly with the developers so that we can actually get what we want. We want growth in designated areas. We're not going to get that growth by creating more ordinances in the rural areas. We're going to get the growth in the designated growth areas by decreasing the red tape and the number of ordinances that make it more difficult to build in the designated areas. We have to use an incentive process to get people to build there rather than to build out in the rural places where we don't want them. So we have to plan in the rural areas comprehensively. Clustering is acceptable. Phasing is a bad idea. It's too easy to get around. It infringes people's rights, and we need to work on creating incentives for the growth areas, not just more legislation or ordinances that get in the way of doing that kind of development.
Question number 5. Consider the growth we see in Northern Virginia. What mistakes have local governments made there, and if you are elected, what will you do differently here?
I moved down here from Loudoun County, and I was living there in Loudoun and before that in D.C. and witnessed most of what Northern Virginia did wrong from 96 through 2003. If you want a candidate that knows exactly what went wrong up there and is willing to do other things, I'm definitely the choice on that regard. Loudoun County made a very large mistake. They adopted, or at least tried to adopt, zero growth policies to make sure that the county would have virtually no growth at all. Now, to do that, they basically took everything east of Route 15 in the county and said you can develop there, and everything west of Route 15 is off limits. They actually set up ordinances that made it such that you couldn't subdivide lower than 50 acres per plot. That made it impossible to develop in the western part of the county, made it very hard for people that owned property to sell it off. And eventually what wound up happening is the developers and landowners went to court and basically got the county's ordinances tossed out, which then led to explosive growth, particularly in the eastern part of the county and, as we see now, in the western part of Loudoun County as well. Fairfax and Arlington and Alexandria went through different processes, but all of it wound up causing explosive growth, and really the policies to limit growth in Northern Virginia backfired because much of it was punishing and restrictive to landowners and to developers rather than using incentives and partnering techniques to actually get the kinds of things they wanted. A perfect example is Reston, Virginia. If you look at the old parts of that area that were developed, the construction techniques kept as many trees in place as possible, used the contours of the land, actually created lakes, did a very beautiful job on the southern half of Reston. You compare that to the northern half of Reston, which has been developed more recently, and it's probably one of the ugliest places you've ever seen. Most of the trees are gone. It's all McMansions placed right up next to each other with very little yard around them. It's basically night and day. And that's an example. Reston is an example of overplanning, starting out well and then going bad. We need to avoid all of those mistakes in Albemarle County. You start avoiding those mistakes by respecting people's property rights and not going after them as though they're the enemy. The second thing you do is you make partners out of the developers. Now, I'm not saying that we just give the developers whatever they want and just, you know, let them run amok. I'm saying that we actually make the developers part of the process, get them involved, remove the red tape so that they can actually do developments in a timely process. I mean, a perfect example is the Hollymead Town Center. That took almost 60 months to get approved to go. During that time, the developer was sitting on that land having to pay taxes and having to pay interest on the loans and everything that held that land, driving his cost, you know, progressively higher and higher while the county was still messing around with changing ordinances and setting up requirements and redefining the requirements and all of that. And that led us to the kind of development that was done up there. It was exceptionally ugly during the construction process. It gave us a development now that is probably not the most attractive thing I've ever seen. And it led to the developer eating roughly $7 million in cost that actually VDOT would have picked up a portion of. I'm talking specifically about widening 29 at that area. VDOT was originally going to do that, but because of the way that the county messed around with approving the project, VDOT finally pulled out, and it was up to the developer to expand 29 in that area. So if we want to avoid the mistakes of Northern Virginia, we have to stop trying to punish developers into doing what we want. We actually have to work with them, get them to be part of the process, and also keep in mind that most of these developers live here, and they care about the community just as much as the rest of us do, and they don't want to see it destroyed either. And we need to understand that they think they're doing the right thing. We think we're doing the right thing. If we all actually, and this actually sounds very un-Republican-like, but if we all work together on these processes and make allies out of each other, create partnerships, we'll get the kind of development that we want to have on the scale that we want to have in Albemarle County, and we won't run into the problems and the explosive growth that Northern Virginia ran into.
Question number 6. Goals of the neighborhood model form of development, a form intended for our county's population centers, include interconnected neighborhoods and more compact, walkable communities with a mix of housing types that allow a larger population to live, work, and shop in a smaller area. Do you support these goals of the neighborhood model for new development?
No, I don't. I think that the neighborhood model for Albemarle County is actually a mistake. The neighborhood model is an example of new urbanist philosophy when it comes to development. And there are places where that type of growth is appropriate. I think that applying the neighborhood model across all of the designated growth areas in Albemarle County is a mistake. Albemarle County is not a high-density community, and nor should it be. As I said, there are appropriate places in the innermost core around the city of Charlottesville. Those sorts of new urbanist communities might make some sense, but out in Crozet, up along 29, they don't make as much sense. Essentially, what we are doing by having these new urbanist communities placed around the county, we're essentially creating little miniature cities, which is part of what Northern Virginia did. You look at Alexandria, which was actually already existing, and that was essentially Alexandria and Washington, D.C., were the urban core of that area. Then you got places like Reston, Herndon, Vienna, Sterling, Rockville, Silver Spring, Greenbelt. All of these little urban centers sprung up around the periphery of Washington, D.C., and any city of any size all share one consistent trait, and that's that they all start to grow out from the middle. So if we do this in Albemarle County, if we plant these little miniature cities around the periphery of the county with Charlottesville in the middle, rather than slowly growing from the center out, we're going to have a series of small cities all growing towards each other, and in effect, we'll actually wind up using up the land twice as quickly as we otherwise would have. Also, on the issue of this new urbanist philosophy, the county points to it as a way to cut down the cost of housing. That's simply not the case. If you look at the literature that new urbanist groups put out, or organizations that promote new urbanism, one of the things that they'll freely admit is that housing in new urbanist developments costs 25% more than the equivalent type of housing in a traditional suburban style neighborhood. So there's already a built-in cost that's, you know, it's more expensive than what you'd find in a regular development. In addition, again, the same literature will point out that new urbanist properties have an abnormally high rate of appreciation in land value. So with the property tax situation that we have in Albemarle County, where our property taxes are skyrocketing and not being adjusted down to compensate, the so-called affordable housing that we'll get will rapidly become unaffordable because the people won't be able to handle the tax burden that comes onto those properties. It's a mistake. If we want to preserve the rural nature of the area, we need to look at older style developments. I'm not talking sprawl, but I'm talking the small, isolated suburban communities with limited access. We already know that a fair number of people in the community in Albemarle County don't want interconnectivity between their neighborhoods. The reason is that they don't want traffic going through that they don't know. Where I live in the Canterbury Hills neighborhood, there's only three ways to get into this neighborhood, which means that back through the neighborhood streets, there is very little traffic. It's safe for children to be in their yards and, you know, I don't want to say play in the streets, but it is safe for children to go into the cul-de-sacs and ride their bikes and be in their front yards and, if they have to, chase a ball out into the street, because there's very little traffic on the roads in this neighborhood. If we have interconnectivity, what you're going to find is a lot of, you're going to find through traffic going through that is going to make those neighborhoods less safe for people's children. You're also going to find more people going through that otherwise would, which will lead actually to higher crime rates, higher accident rates. Once you make a neighborhood more accessible, especially if it becomes a shortcut to get from point A to point B, people will go through it and people will use it. That's one of the reasons why we have the traffic calming measures up on the eastern edge of my district here. Those people in that city neighborhood didn't want people going through their neighborhood, so they petitioned the city and got the traffic calming measures put in place. If we embark down this road of interconnectivity, we'll find these same traffic calming measures going in other places, because if enough people complain hard enough, the county will have to respond, and we'll start seeing more of these concrete or tube barriers going up, blocking off these streets that we put in anyway. So this, I believe, is a case where why don't we actually listen to what the citizens want and don't do the interconnectivity so they can have their isolated neighborhoods that they want to have, where they know who's coming in and out, and they don't have to worry about high rates of traffic. So I don't believe that the neighborhood model is a good thing, except in a few limited cases. It's the whole argument, the model versus a model. I think that it's good in some places. In urban cores, it might make a lot of sense. In more rural locations, in outlying parts of the county, it doesn't make sense, and we should look at other types of development. So there are places where the neighborhood model is appropriate. There is virtually no place, according to the people of Albemarle County, where interconnectivity is appropriate.
Question number 7. One example of a significant neighborhood model project is Old Trail Village. Do you think Old Trail will be quality growth for Crozet and Charlottesville Albemarle? And a follow-up, will it provide affordable living choices for our citizens, and how will they remain affordable?
Let me deal with the affordability question first. If Old Trail follows the pattern that other new urbanist developments have followed, the property, regardless of what proffers the developer might give, the properties will be 25% more expensive than like properties in standard developments, which causes an affordability issue right there. I mean, Albemarle County is already becoming very unaffordable as it is. If we have a development like Old Trail that's already 25% more expensive right off the get-go, that exacerbates the affordability problem. And yes, there might be some proffers in place, but on the opposite side of that, you look at, on the flip side of that, you look at the appreciation value in a new urbanist development, and they do have a tendency to appreciate in value much more rapidly than standard type developments. So with the tax burden, you're going to find a situation where very rapidly people aren't going to be able to afford to hang on to those properties because the tax burden is going to become too large. So I don't and never have believed that a new urbanist neighborhood model, whatever you want to call it, type development is the solution to affordable housing. As far as will it be good growth or bad growth for that area, there's already an example of how Old Trail is going to be bad growth. The interconnectivity requirement of the neighborhood model is making the developer put a road out to the edge of the property. This is coming right to the front of a gentleman's property in Crozet that built a house there several years ago, doesn't want to sell his land, but he's in the way of connecting Old Trail with an already existing Crozet neighborhood. This road that's going to come up to this man's property and stop is going to decrease the attractiveness of this piece of property as something that this man can someday sell. So the county hasn't come in at this point and said, we're going to seize your land and take it from you so we can build the interconnected road. I think right now, with so much attention on the Kelo decision and property rights, I think that the county would not be so foolish as to do that, especially during an election cycle. But over the years, you're going to almost find sort of a backdoor property rights situation, whereas we get more of these developments coming along, and if the county still insists on going down the interconnectivity route, you're going to have roads coming up to people's property lines and dead-ending, and the county is either going to have to seize people's land to put these interconnective roads through, or they're going to leave them sit there and basically diminish this person's property value to the point where it's no longer worth them holding on to it unless they're just going to be plain stubborn about it. So the Old Trail development is already causing a property rights problem in the area. Now, I know that doesn't answer, is it going to be good or bad development? But I think before we can answer that question, we have to answer the fundamental question, is Old Trail and developments like Old Trail going to impact other people's property around that type of development? And we can already see that in this case, there is one person who is being very affected by it. Now, will it work? I doubt it. The idea that people will be able to live and work in the same place is a wonderful idea in theory, and it's a great philosophy. Now, in practical terms, that very rarely ever bears out to be true. New urbanist neighborhood model, whatever you want to call it, type neighborhoods work great on paper. They stop working well once people move in and start acting like people. That is the big Achilles heel in any kind of new urbanist development. People start behaving like people. They take a job that's going to pay them better than the jobs that they can find close to them. I mean, basically, if you find a better paying job, you're going to drive to that job. You're not going to keep the job that's close just because it's close. If you can get more money, you're going to go where more money is. If you can get a better deal at a grocery store, you're going to go to the grocery store where you get a better deal. It's a nice idea that people will live and work and shop where they can walk and do all of that. But people are always looking to make their dollars stretch as far as possible. They will drive to where they can get a better job. They will drive to where they can get a better deal shopping. So I think that it's a fairy tale to believe that the neighborhood model will work exactly the way that its planners hope it'll work, because people will always act like people and they'll always look for the best deal. So ultimately, I don't think that Old Trail will turn out to be great development. It looks nice on paper, but when it comes down to the practicalities of what it's supposed to accomplish, I don't think it'll do it. I think it's pointing the way to additional property rights infringements that we'll see in the future, and I think that it wasn't a high-density development like that was not appropriate for the kind of town that Crozet is. I think that would have been much more appropriately done closer into Charlottesville.
Question number 8. Our designated growth areas tell developers where we want them to build. Should we also tell developers through zoning what form we want that development to take? Why or why not?
Most localities tell developers how they want development to happen through zoning. That's a traditional function of government. You know, we appropriately zone things to go in appropriate places. We tell industrial where it has to go. We tell commercial where it has to go. We tell residential where it has to go. You know, it reminds me of the success of a computer game, SimCity. It's all about zoning. And the reason that works is because governments have always done it, and because you have to develop cities and towns and regions in such a way that they function properly. If you're just haphazardly scattering things around, you're going to wind up with incompatibilities and problems. So zoning in and of itself is an appropriate tool. The problem that we get into, especially in Albemarle County, is we overzone and we change zones and we change requirements to fit into zones. And our ordinance and laws here seem to be sort of a moving target. At least when you talk to developers, they'll tell you that the zoning requirements, from their perspective, tend to be a moving target. The best thing that we can do is work with the developers, get them onto our side, make them our partners in all of this, and work to make sure that zoning is done to its greatest effect. The designated growth areas as they are right now, I'm very uncomfortable with the idea that we've put some designated growth areas on the periphery of the county. I think that's a mistake. We need to concentrate growth from the core out rather than from the outside in. And I know that does put some burden on the city of Charlottesville itself to look at becoming a more high-density place. But that's the reality of any central city in a region, is that the central city needs to grow as the focal point, and you expand out from there. Once you start putting small cities, miniature cities, on the periphery of an area, you're going to grow that much faster and use up land that much quicker. And ultimately, zoning won't necessarily stop that kind of rapid development if you've got these small cities laying around. Because eventually, if you get enough population, some people are going to get it into their heads that we have enough people now and enough of a tax base that we'll incorporate and become our own city. Think about it this way. If enough people and enough development move into Crozet, and Crozet develops a population that comes even close to the population of the city of Charlottesville, you're going to wind up with a situation where people are going to get it into their heads in Crozet that it might be worthwhile to incorporate and become its own government so they can govern their own affairs. And then you'll have an independent city on the western edge of the county, an independent city in the center of the county, and those two will eventually grow towards each other and eat up more land more rapidly along the 250-64 corridor. So if we want to keep growth at a reasonable level and preserve our rural places, we really need to focus more on the core of the region, which is the city of Charlottesville and the inner ring of Albemarle County, and not put these growth areas out on the peripheries.
Question number 9. What types of incentives should exist for developers to build in our population centers or designated growth areas? Can you name some specific regulatory or financial examples? And should the development here be required to conform with the neighborhood model?
I think the biggest incentive that we can give to developers to grow in the designated growth areas and in the urban core is removing the neighborhood model as the only standard to work under. If we set up a series of models that can be applied in different places, basically a set of options, it makes it that much more attractive for a developer to do the development where we want them to, because the developer can come in and say, all right, I would like to use model C to work in this particular place, and I've got this other plot of land over here that I'd like to use model D. Now, whatever these various models are going to be, they do need to be well thought out and understood. But as long as we only have one option that is applied everywhere, developers are going to be severely restrained and are going to wind up doing development that is bad and not very cooperative with the county or the county citizens. So that is really the best way to do this. I don't believe in tax incentives. I don't believe in financial incentives. That just adds additional tax burden to the people that live in the county. The best thing that we can do is change the governmental culture in Albemarle County, and we do that by changing the ordinances and the requirements. We don't need to bring in a new set of bureaucrats. We simply need to loosen the restrictions that are in place. And again, that does not mean letting developers just, you know, run willy-nilly around the county doing what they want to do. We still need to control the places where growth can happen, but we need to create a set of models that will allow developers to do different kinds of development in different places and essentially make it easier to build in the designated growth areas and not in the rural places. I mean, right now they build out in the rural parts of the county because it's easier to do it there. there's less restriction. If we make it easier to build in the growth areas, they'll build in the growth areas.
Question number 10. Do you support construction of a western U.S. 29 bypass around Charlottesville on the currently proposed route or some other route? Please explain why or why not, and where that other route might go.
I do support some sort of a 29 bypass in the western portion of the county. There have been people that have talked about an eastern bypass to accomplish the same goal. That's unrealistic. And in addition, that would go through other counties, and we can't put our traffic problems off onto other counties. They have no reason to solve our problems for us. Western Bypass, as it's currently proposed, has passed its point. It's been on the books for decades. Nothing's been done with it, despite the fact that VDOT owns a good portion of the land along the route. But since we have waited so long, it's past the point of its effectiveness. It's time for the county to vote it down once and for all and be done with it. Let VDOT sell the land that they're currently holding back into the market so that the neighborhoods that are currently full of rental houses that VDOT is renting out, let that go back into private ownership, have those stop being rental neighborhoods so that those neighborhoods will stop declining, because after all, VDOT's probably one of the worst landlords out there you could possibly have. Land that's owned along the route right now, the currently proposed route, needs to be returned into private hands so we can get the property tax revenue on those plots and restore those neighborhoods. A western bypass does have to be built. With more development going on in Crozet, especially with it being one of the designated growth areas, we're going to find more people living out there, with the bulk of the jobs still being up and down the 29 corridor. If we don't have a way to move people north and south from the western end of the county, we're going to see them simply coming in on 250 or 64 or Barracks Road and then going up 29. That's going to exacerbate the traffic situation that we have on the major east-west corridors that we have right now in order to get people from the western part of the county to 29. And, of course, it'll make 29 worse. So the western bypass needs to go someplace not in Crozet, but much closer to Crozet. We're probably talking west of the Neachum River, but east of Crozet. Now, that's going to mean that there are going to be people that are going to have to either give up some land or find some incentive to get these people to sell the land for the route. But it's something that we do need to plan. We need to plan it now, and we need to implement it sooner rather than later. If we would have done the Western Bypass decades ago, like we should have, some of the traffic problems that we have today wouldn't exist. But in true governmental fashion, we took what was a problem, planned it and planned it and studied it and overstudied it and overstudied it to the point where it became a crisis rather than just an inconvenience. If we sit on a Western bypass for another 20 or 30 years, we'll find the same crisis happening, but it'll involve more of the western portion of Albemarle County, and it'll make Crozet a less attractive place to live because it'll be that much harder to get from your home in the western portion of the county to your job in the central or northern part of the county. So we do need a western bypass. It needs to be in a different place, and the land that's currently held by VDOT for the currently planned route needs to be released because that bypass is never going to be built where it was originally planned.
Question number 11. Please describe any other transportation projects on the Route 29 North corridor that you would support to reduce congestion.
The projects that are currently on the books need to be done. The Hillsdale and Berkmore extensions need to be done. The Meadow Creek Parkway needs to be done. Those are things that are already planned out. We know where they're going to go. We know what their impact is going to be. We know what kind of relief they're going to give 29. Those things need to be done. If we sit on those like we sat on the Western Bypass and don't ever get them done, what is now a bad problem on 29 is going to become a crisis in not too short an order, and we'll really be wishing that we'd done those projects. The longer that we sit on them, the harder it's going to be to get those projects done. The idea of an eastern bypass won't happen because the other counties, the counties to our east, have no reason to give us an eastern bypass. They don't need to solve our traffic problems. As far as widening 29, there are probably some places where it's appropriate. I find it very interesting that VDOT believes that 250 north of the airport and 250 east of Charlottesville and 29 north of the airport need to be widened, and it's troublesome that the Board of Supervisors was surprised. The Board of Supervisors and MPO both were surprised that VDOT thought that those were important projects. I think that shows that there is a certain level of disconnect between the current leadership and the people in the county. Most people that I've talked to think that 29 would benefit from being widened from the airport on up to the Greene County line, and 250 being widened east of the city would also benefit from having extra lanes added to it. I don't know if those projects are going to happen, but based on the conversations I've had with people, it is at least worth investigating it, and VDOT thinks that it's a very worthwhile thing to do. And for some reason, our Board of Supervisors and the MPO were completely taken aback by it. They didn't know that VDOT was thinking about it, didn't know that the citizens were thinking about it, and it shows a level of disconnect. So the current projects that are on the books need to be done. We need to work closer with VDOT to understand the traffic needs as they see them. We need to deal with a Western bypass, not as it's currently planned, but to take into account the development that's going to go out in the western part of the county. And above and beyond anything else, we need to do traffic projects when we say we're going to do them, not decades after we've studied them to death and let the problems develop into crises.
Question number 12. What are your overall transportation priorities?
My overall transportation priorities are to solve the traffic problem that we have right now. We are rapidly approaching the traffic levels of Northern Virginia. I don't think we want to see 250 or 29 or 64 become another I-66 or Route 7 or Route 50. If we don't do something about traffic now, which means, despite what a lot of people would like to think, solving traffic problems means building roads. If you don't build roads, people will still come, they'll still drive cars, and they'll make our traffic worse. You don't solve traffic problems by not building roads. You're not going to force people onto buses that way. We don't have the population base to support any other kind of mass transit, meaning light rail or subways. I mean, Metro up in D.C. is a wonderful system, and I used it extensively when I lived up there, but Albemarle County could not support light rail or subway. We don't have the population density or actual just overall population for that. You can't force people into buses by limiting the number of roads. Americans are typically very independent and very single-minded people, and we love our cars, regardless of what most people would like to say. We like to drive our cars. By not building roads, you're not going to force people into buses. You're just going to create bigger traffic problems. So we do need to build roads to relieve our traffic situations. We need relief valves for 29 to the east and to the west. We need to deal with the growing burden that the development Crozet is going to place on 64 and 250 and Garth and Barracks. If we don't do something about those problems, our traffic is only going to get worse, and we don't solve the traffic problems by relying exclusively on mass transit. It's never solved the problem in any city, so we have to build roads. And I do think we need to look at some mass transit options, but they are not the solutions. They are simply a component to the overall solution. Because as I said, you'll never forcibly get someone to use mass transit. You have to give them a reason to, and I don't think we have the development type or the density to really rely on mass transit as a viable solution at this point.
All right. Question number 13. What is your top priority for action by the Board of Supervisors if you are elected?
At this point, my top priority is actually to make sure that the Board of Supervisors does not violate the property rights of any of the citizens of Albemarle County. In the wake of the Kelo decision by the Supreme Court earlier this summer, local government has been given more authority and power than it ever has in the history of the Republic. We have to make sure that the people that we have elected on that board first and foremost consider our rights as citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia and the United States as the paramount, that the consideration and defense of our rights has to be the paramount concern of any elected official. And our planning efforts, our want to preserve rural space, our want to provide more affordable housing, any of those other very worthy and worthwhile projects and goals and agendas have to play second fiddle to the defense of people's rights. If we don't have that defense of rights, we may as well give up on any other aspirations that we have as a people, because once you can eliminate one right, you can eliminate any right. So my largest priority is to defend people's property rights. After that, I want to make sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of Northern Virginia. I lived there long enough and saw a place that I cared about and wanted to be get destroyed. I don't want to see that happen in Albemarle County. I've come to care about this place as much, if not more, than I did with Northern Virginia. And I really don't want to see the same thing happen again, because I don't want to get pushed out of another county because I can't stand what's happened to it. And finally, I want to make the third priority is to make sure that people can afford to live and stay in Albemarle County. We have to bring in better jobs so that people can afford the properties that we have here. We have to control property taxes to make sure that people can stay in their houses and not be taxed out of their home. So really, it's defensive rights, managing growth so that we have a place that is worth living in, and making sure that Albemarle County stays affordable.
Question number 14. What are the greatest challenges facing the Albemarle County Planning Commission, and what type of person will you nominate for a position on the commission?
I think the greatest challenge that is faced by the Planning Commission is staying in touch with the real world. The Planning Commission really decides, to a large extent, how we're going to grow and what we're going to do about growth in the county. One of the things that came out of the Planning Commission was, at least in the late part of the 90s, was the DISC project and its recommendations, which eventually grew into the neighborhood model. And part of that calls for the interconnectivity of neighborhoods. The citizens of Albemarle County clearly are not in favor of interconnectivity. And that shows a certain level of disconnect between the Planning Commission and the citizens of the county. I think that we need to have a Planning Commission that is more concerned with what the citizens want rather than embarking down philosophical roads of how we should and shouldn't develop. Philosophical and theoretical planning is fun to do when you're playing around on the computer or when you're sitting in front of a drafting table drawing up your ideal, your personally ideal community. But when you get into the real world and you have people acting like people, those philosophical ideas sort of break down. And we can't treat the citizens of Albemarle County as lab rats. This isn't a big experiment on whether or not a particular philosophical approach to growth is going to work or not. These are people's real lives. And the Planning Commission has to take that into consideration. They are playing with real people and real lives when they do their planning. And I think that's sometimes something that people in government lose sight of on all levels, is that they're affecting real people. What I would like to see as far as people on the Planning Commission, who I would nominate, I think we have enough experts. I'd like to see real people with real opinions that have to live real lives on the Planning Commission. I think there is a need for some experts, but I think we may have gone too far down the road of having experts. I think we need to focus more on getting real people onto these, not just the Planning Commission, but other county commissions and boards as well. We need real people that live in these neighborhoods, that are affected by these decisions, having an input on these decisions, and not just in the public comment hearings, but actually in on the planning process, to say, no, we don't want interconnectivity. We don't think that's something that's going to do our families and our neighborhoods good. So I would nominate real people that don't necessarily have planning expertise or urban development credentials. I think sometimes it's good to have the input of regular citizens.
Question number 15. Do we have appropriate resources in county government to achieve the objectives in our comprehensive plan? And a follow-up, in what way, if any, do we need to make changes, and what impact will your recommendations have on staffing and the annual budget?
The biggest shortfall that we have in achieving goals in the government is the goals themselves. The governmental culture that we have right now is shaped by the goals that we've defined. And with the current set of goals, yes, I do think we have the resources to achieve those goals. Are those the right goals? No. We need to focus on affordability. We need to focus on growth that's centered in the core. We need to focus on the defense of property rights. Those don't seem to be the current goals of the county government. A perfect example, in the area of affordability, the biggest tool that we are lacking right now in achieving affordability in the county is not being a member of the Thomas Jefferson Partnership for Economic Development. As long as Albemarle County is not a member of that organization, the best tool that we could pull out of our toolbox doesn't exist. TJPED doesn't work for Albemarle County. It works for City of Charlottesville, works for all the surrounding counties. It doesn't work on behalf of Albemarle County because we're not a member. So what would be a very valuable tool in bringing better paying jobs, higher skilled jobs into the county so that people could afford to live here? Albemarle County doesn't have that tool because they've actively chosen not to have that tool. They've actively chosen not to join TJPED. That's a mistake. It's in the area of cooperation that Albemarle County is lacking the tools it needs to accomplish the goals that the citizens need. The goals need to be affordability. The goals need to be managed growth centered on the core around Charlottesville. The goals need to be the defense of people's rights. Until we start working with organizations that have those same goals in mind, Albemarle County may have the tools to achieve the philosophical goals that it wants, but considering what is happening to the citizens of the county right now, I'm not sure that those philosophical goals are appropriate. We need to make sure people can afford to live here. The only way we're going to do that is with better jobs, and we only get those better jobs by joining TJPED. We need growth concentrated more into the core. In order to do that, we have to work closer with Charlottesville. There always seems to be some enmity between the county and the city. We only solve that by creating cooperation. And as far as defending property rights, well, we do that by having elected officials that are concerned with the defense of those rights, and by making it very clear to the people that work for the government that the defense of those rights take a top seat over any other priority that the county might have. So we can achieve the current goals that are set out. I just think they're the wrong goals.
The last question, number 16. Have you received any endorsements yet that you would like to make the public aware of?
I have been endorsed by the Charlottesville Area Association of Realtors, because we do share similar visions. The idea that we need to have affordable housing, the idea that we need to have better jobs so that people can afford the housing we do have. I think Carr and I are pretty much on the same page there. You make sure that people can afford houses by making sure that they have jobs to afford those houses. You can solve the problem very easily by having better jobs. I've also been endorsed by our Congressman, Virgil Goode. I've been endorsed by the 58th House District Delegate, Rob Bell. And I've been endorsed by City Councilor Rob Schilling. I think those endorsements in and of themselves show that I'm willing to work with people on various levels of government, and I'm willing to work with neighboring governments, mainly here the city of Charlottesville. With those relationships in place, I believe that I'd be able to foster cooperation with neighboring governments and work on the state and national level to help get the money that Albemarle needs to do some of the transportation projects that are vital. In addition, the endorsement from Carr shows that I'm willing to work with the realtors to find real solutions and solve the real problems that are facing the county. After all, if Carr didn't like the approach that I have to things and my stand on the particular issues, they wouldn't have endorsed me. I find it also worthwhile and interesting to point out that they also supported a Democrat. So they're not being partisan in this. They're supporting a Republican in one race, or supporting a Democrat in the other race. This isn't a partisan issue. This doesn't have to do with Republican or Democrat. This has to do with good solutions to tough problems. And I believe that all of the people that have endorsed me feel that I have the right solutions to the tough problems that we have right now in the county.
Thank you, Christian.